I had a closet hobby since I was a kid. I was a heavy gamer since the word wasn't even a word. And basically, to make a long story short, I decided on a movie set to make my own massive multiplayer online strategy game. And we decided, we started to develop this game. A year later, the game is out. It's doing kind of well at its height. I was the founder and CEO of it. At its height, it had around 80 employees. But the short of it, I moved on. I opened another company. And a year after that, I understood I need to switch gears. I can't, there's something that's not working for me and I need to switch gears.
Shachar Sorek, welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Thank you so much for joining me. Shachar, you're extremely multidisciplinary. You have such a unique background in so many different facets, from Taekwondo to acting and film and all the way to marketing today with Overwolf, an incredible company, one that many of us know and love, and talking about creator economy, gaming economy, this entire world. So a lot for us to unpack. And so in order to do so, first, I'd love to understand you a little bit better, because I'd love to understand how all these things are coming in together. And then we will spend time talking about Overwolf and the gaming world. So tell me a little bit about yourself, your upbringing, and how you've gotten here.
Okay, I'll give you kind of a quick grab of all the sorts of nooks and crannies I've visited. So I was born and raised in Jerusalem, in the city itself and in the outskirts. Young age, I was a professional martial artist, five times Israel national champion, competed worldwide, ranked. Military, a little bit of everything. And then when I left, I started my studies for BA and MA, but I became an actor on TV and film. Also opened my own martial arts gyms and had students. And I was very busy between TV and martial arts. At some point, I sold a TV show to the States and moved to Los Angeles to make it. The show never got done, but I got into the industry there. And at some point, on a set, I'm shooting a movie on a set with a bunch of well-known movie stars. I had a closet hobby since I was a kid. I was a gamer. I was a heavy gamer since the word wasn't even a word. It was a nerdy type of hobby, but I kept gaming all my life. It started from the 80s into the 90s, and then when I was shooting, I started playing strategy MMOs. And basically, to make a long story short, I decided on a movie set to make my own massive multiplayer online strategy game, web-based. And when I got back to LA, I teamed up with a partner and a game design student from USC. And we decided, we started to develop this game. Again, a year later, the game is out. It's doing kind of well. And then we managed to raise a bunch of money. Some of it came from Israel. With a request that we come back to Israel, which was starting to become a gaming powerhouse on the casual casino side, to build a company. So I went back to Israel about a decade ago and opened Seven Elements Studios. And at its height, I was the founder and CEO of it. At its height, it had around 80 employees. You know,
wow.
Whatever you think about, you know, a happening studio, brought two MMO titles to market, almost got bought for a significant amount of money by an American publisher. But at the end, when the deal didn't kind of failed at the last moment or passed, I decided to move on. All of these little stories can open into massive stories. But the short of it, I moved on. I opened another company. With one of my board members, who's a very well-known VC in Israel. And a year after that, I understood I need to switch gears. There's something that's not working for me, and I need to switch gears. And I became an advisor to multiple startups and CEOs, primarily starting to develop my own kind of system on how you tell a story of a company, but not just the storytelling aspect of it. At that point, I've raised tens of millions of dollars. So I've figured out a way to make the room work for you, VC-wise, also inside the company, kind of alignment of values and vision and mission with actual deliverables. So I would say a story with roots, not just And that's just a story you tell, which kind of percolated through the decks and the way the company worked and the product and the tech. I managed to help a few startups do really well. And one of the startups I'd worked with was Overwolf, particularly with Uri Marchand, the founder, one of the co-founder and CEO. And I really loved the work there. Exceptional people, really the best of the best, a very deep sense of values and mission and humble. And at some point, a year and a half in, when a lot of the things we were working on started to really take off, I decided to come in and help the company as a CMO, but I also lead IR in the company. I'm the investor relations officer, so I meet with a bunch of VCs and backs and whatnot that are interested in the company. So that's where you're meeting me right now. And I guess this knack of really helping marketing and market-wise to tell a company's story, but also to amplify it via performance tools is what brings me to this position and doing it successfully.
Wow. Okay. So I want to now look into the gaming world. And this is a world in which it feels that it's obviously one of the most incredible markets that are emerging, undoubtedly. And didn't grow up as a gamer, but allowed myself to be immersed in this market, in this category, both as a sort of entry gamer, but also as a technology enthusiast and as a friends enthusiast. And help me understand a little bit about what's been happening here over the last few years. What is this world that we're living in with gaming?
So there's a few layers to that question. I go as a lifelong gamer and a martial art enthusiast and a person who also touches on, for lack of a better word, I'll say on the spiritual side of life with mindfulness and all sorts of other things. I think that we are living in a very confused world where a lot of people have some sort of a breakdown to the sense-making mechanisms that they grow up in and around, whatever is in them and around them. And I think that games offer a great platform for you to sense make yourself in. So when everything else collapses around you, when we're moving in the direction of dystopia, all the environments that help you find your purpose, your narrative, that are very clear on how you can level up in them, that give you also the ability to really merge and experience with, I think all, and that is games, they become super intensified. And there's good reasons for that, and there's bad reasons or more challenging reasons of effects that can come from that. But in general, gaming is the ultimate sense-making platform where people can spend time and get things in and clarity and experience things that they cannot today in the outer world. So it's just growing and growing, and it will continue to grow. It's a cohort that's going to continue to grow. Primarily in kind of the mid to hardcore experiences of it, and also it will bleed into everything. So we're already seeing that games are synonymous with the word entertainment, but this is just going to accelerate it. I don't know if you have kids. My 8-year-old Ben is just spending most of his free time in Roblox and Minecraft and all these ecosystems where he has his best friends. That's what they do. They communicate. They find each other there. And I think that's part of this whole shift on that demographic, from a sociological, philosophical standpoint. That's why games are going to continue to grow. In particular, and I'm going to bring it a little bit into Overwolf, there's some tectonic shifts that happen in the world of gaming. One of them pertains to what Overwolf is doing, and that's in the user-generated content, the UGC area. Now, when I say UGC, UGC has two tracks. It has a performance track where you can see streamers and content producers, and that's mostly what people think about when they say UGC. But what I refer to is the actual creators, as third-party, independent creators that produce, develop, design products, add-ons, mods, applications, private servers in and around popular games. Now, what we've seen happen in the last few years is a sort of tectonic shift where UGC, which was once a taboo for game studios. Game studios, specifically the big titles or any titles, they don't want anybody to touch their IP or to mess around with their IP. There's a few exceptions to that, but majority, that's the sentiment of the big publishers. They are now opening up to have a conversation with third-party creators. And third-party creators are a very different animal. These are, you know, renegade or just people that love the game. It could be hackers, could be developers, could be, you know, just passionate gamers that have some sense and they want to bring something to the game. So where in the past it was just was shut down, today we're seeing more and more acceptance of that in the market. I think you could see that, you know, when it was all intensified by the, you know, the Roblox IPO, success of Minecraft, and games that are UGC based at their core, where you give players the ability to experience many different types of game experiences. But I think that also due to them and other changes in the market, the demand side from the user side for constant content has increased substantially. So if when I played a game, or back in the day, you would play a game, you would finish it, you would just play it again and again and again. You wouldn't have any expectations to have anything happen to it or for more content that's not coming from the publisher. Today it's different. And we see full-on ecosystems that the third-party generated environment has more playtime in it. And this is where Overwolf enters the picture. Overwolf believes that playtime in and around games is going to be leaning towards the UGC side as we move forward into the future, meaning you would play more time eventually in the UGC aspect than in the core game or the vanilla game. And we want to empower third-party creators or in-game creators, as we call them, to make creation a profession. And we have a business model that allows for creators, third-party creators, to make a living out of their creations, which is, it never happened before. And just to give a little bit of perspective of the market, so there's one big game or game ecosystem called Roblox that is a very specific type of an ecosystem. It's hugely successful, over 70 million daily active users. That's massive. But aside from Roblox, and you have, of course, Epic starting to push in this direction, but aside from these two specific environments, you have a market that needs servicing. And that's what Overwolf is there to do. It wants to help all the game studios where they are to UGC, to help them incorporate UGC into their games. And we do that by providing a zero-to-hero solution for any game studio, from the actual tech of bringing it to their game, from community tools, moderation, curation. We've built a very robust moderation and curation service in Overwolf, which for the big studios is a big thing, because you cannot, as you can imagine, when you open the gates to third-party creators, they are bad players that want to perhaps use and abuse. So we're kind of the experts on being the gatekeepers.
Incredible. Now, when you talk about your role, so there's the market of the gaming, there's the trend, the macro trend of UGC, of gamers spending time in UGC versus the vanilla. And then there's the creators who empower and are the enablers of the UGC content. And you see yourself as the guild of in-game creators, right? So it's to me, that immediately resonates as a community play. As you're creating something that's bigger than the individual. It's beyond just a developer tool. Talk to me a little bit about the community aspect here.
So I think that, I mean, for anything to happen, I mean, one of the biggest aspects of getting a community or getting UGC to work around a game is to know how to facilitate and service the community in a way that inspires them to not only create, but also help each other create and kind of help us foster the communication between them and the game studio at large. A good example would be now with a game we just launched with Studio Wildcard, ARK Survival Ascended. So ARK Survival Ascended is a game that launched on PC and now also on Xbox and PS5. It's cross-platform, and it's also cross-play in terms of modding for the first time. So just a little bit about the game. I don't know if you know ARK or not. Check it out. It's a very popular game. I would say dinosaurs with bazookas would be the thing, but it's a heavily modded game and it has a massive modding community outside. And part of our job was to inspire that community to come inside the game. And we start to work specifically with the creators themselves, but we also, with the studio, align incentives on creation, which are things that didn't really happen before. So we opened a new creator category for that game, which is also game studios. We have game studios creating DLC level mods, meaning that now you could play ARK, but you can also download, soon to be, it's not out yet, it's going to be out later this quarter, our DLC level mod, which means that the game itself becomes this engine of content that content can be released on. And in that sense, you can only do that when you kind of manage to facilitate cooperation between the game studio, the community. You manage to standardize the connection, but also standardize it in terms of best practices. Okay, what do I do? What we also manage to do, which is extremely, there's a lot of behind the scenes taxing assignments, like to get a mod working on Xbox, you need certification, for instance. So we take care of that for the modder now. So suddenly their ability to deploy on all these platforms is exponentially grown, because back in the day, they would need to approach Xbox, which they would never respond. And there's all these broken links. And part of what we're doing is standardizing these things. So it's a plethora of actual services, which is tech in hand that is useful, but also relationships and community. So we, you know, I'm taking Studio Wildcard as an example because we have a great relationship with them. We have, you know, weekly syncs on all various levels. We talk with the creators. We do town halls. We're constantly working and making this community gel, but also pushing their creations out and trying to help them create the best creations they can, and then also market them to gamers. So it's kind of a cohesive ecosystem of various products that comes together to facilitate the rise of the in-game creators.
And what is this for you, bringing this concept and bringing the messaging and these ideals to the community through the communication and on behalf of the company? What has this been like for you?
So for me, I was always about doing things around vitalizing, I want to say civilization, but it's a bit too big. I really love to be and help people kind of step up and bring their vision into the world. And with games being such a core, in my personal blueprint, I find it as a privilege and also kind of a mission to help these. Sometimes it's these lone in-game creators. You know, there's a guy in England or a guy somewhere in the States or in Germany that they don't know. They have something. They brought something great, but they can't bring it to the forefront. And through our platform today, not only can they bring it to the forefront, but they can also, if it's really successful, make a living out of it. That's a big game changer for someone in their life. And that's a mission that really inspires me personally as I move, you know, to touch a life individually is an inspiring thing. And in this particular way, I think there's still a lot to do. I think some of the big gaming studios understand they need to bring it and they need to build a UGC strategy and ecosystem around their game. But there's still, it's just in its infancy. Last year, we worked with EA on The Sims 4, which now is extremely popular on curseforge.com, which is another website of a football. So it's happening. It's already happening. I have this paper on the four horsemen of the UGC apocalypse. One is the first horseman is the demand. The market demands change constantly. The Sims is a good example because it doesn't matter what Maxis, the game studio, puts out. Their gamers are so amped on the game, they constantly want more stuff out and they just can't keep up with the demand. But that's true to many games today. The other one is standardization, which is game studios now understanding they need to bring it and we're kind of bridging it. The third one is the growth. There's a massive growth in the industry. And the fourth one is tools, which is, you know, it could be Lumen and baking tools of 3D and UEFN. It could be, with us, all sorts of tools that are coming that help creators, AI, of course, and all that kind of stuff. So,
phenomenal. Shachar, I want to thank you for the time. This was so interesting, and I feel like I got a really good deep dive into your world, which obviously you've been a part of for many years as a gamer and as a participant, but now also as a leader, both from the entrepreneurial side yourself and leading studios and running companies in this regard, but now also from the marketing side, you know, taking a company, an incredible company, raised more than $150 million from incredible investors, some of the best in the world, being at the cutting edge of not only the categorical shift, but also the technological implementations, but looking at how do you build a community of now those that the individuals that empower this category to rise and emerge as there's a shift in consumer behavior towards UGC content. So fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for joining me. Best of luck with everything you do, and I'm excited to continue being a fan from the side. So thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.